Friday, February 16, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant, independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. So to begin, a really quick wrap-up on what we've been talking about in regard to the recent shooting in Florida. It's something I wrote an article about that I highly recommend you all check out. There's just a few quick updates that I think are important to consider in this entire thing. Really, the article I covered was really discussing the larger understanding of how the FBI has been directly involved, as discussed by the New York Times, as discussed by The Intercept, and many other publications, involved in basically creating terrorist events, so then to come in and stop them and look the victor. And as we're seeing here, a large narrative here, which I think is a little bit disconcerting that it's being covered by the mainstream media, is that the FBI was aware beforehand and failed to follow through, which is something we've seen in regard to so many different cases. Yet now it seems it's being carried by the mainstream media, which is a little interesting. First, one of the points I want to discuss is the idea that from the beginning, mainstream media has been pushing the narrative that the shooter was directly tied to white nationalist militia groups. Yet we're seeing contradicting reports coming from the local law enforcement from the area there, saying that there are absolutely no connections to militia or white nationalists. Now, again, we're seeing back and forth here, but to simply have the fact that the local law enforcement is claiming it doesn't exist, and yet they're still pushing it without even discussing that point, stands out to me that there's an agenda there. Clearly, there's a point trying to tie this to militias, to white nationalists, to domestic terrorism, which is something we've covered in recent shows, which is clearly a focus for the government right now, to cast these patriots as terrorists, people like myself as domestic terrorists, which is kind of alarming. Even people that just staunchly believe in the Constitution and they're supposed to be domestic terrorists because they're passionate about the American ideals, which is very interesting. But ultimately what we're seeing here is that they're trying to push this narrative that it's connected to these militias, and it seems like it might not be the case, which stands out as a clear agenda there, as well as the idea that they're really now coming out. The FBI itself is even coming out and openly stating that they mishandled the tip on the gunman's desire to kill and is talking about the shooting above the schools. I mean, it seems to me that this is being set up and knocked down. Like, this was the point here. Now, there's a whole discussion to be had about whether there are these shootings, are we talking about Sandy Hook and these things, whether or not there was really a shooting or people actually died. And there's really, to me, that's almost irrelevant at the point, because we know, in my opinion, that there have been psyops and have been false flags just like that, that have been carried out in the past. As far as I'm concerned, that's a fact. I highly recommend you all do your own research. But as far as I'm concerned, things like that are very, very, I mean, at the very least, it's a possibility. And so we shouldn't disregard something like that. But in this case, I do think that people were hurt and I do think people were killed and that this shooting did happen. So the question is whether or not it was used after the fact or whether it is being used. And as we've said in the past, government saying never let a good crisis go to waste. Clearly, this is being used. I mean, we saw the discussion of gun control come up immediately following this. But I honestly think that what's happening right now is a using of this, and almost as if it was set up this way. I mean, it's a horrible thing to say that possibly they allowed it to happen, maybe in the idea that they thought they could jump in and stop it before it was carried out, which again is something that's been proven that the FBI has actually done, been involved in these things, giving them guns, weapons, vehicles, facilitating the entire thing with the ultimate idea of stepping in and stopping it before it happened. But then the question arises whether or not they've had things like that where they failed to stop it and then never admitted that fact. So anyway, there's a lot of things flying around. Ultimately, people were killed here, in my opinion, and it's something that we should respect. There's families that were hurt, and I think that's something we always have to respect and not just flagrantly call this something it's not when we don't have all of the evidence. But we should always be questioning the official narrative. And in my opinion, this is very much being used to carry something out. With the white nationalist militia aspect and the FBI coming out about it, there's a lot of stuff flying around that seems very off to me. There was also a school right now, I believe, that's on lockdown for shots being fired. And I mean, there's a lot of stuff flying around this case that should make us question what we're looking at the very least. So I highly recommend some due diligence in this entire story and not to be swayed by one political side or the other. Now, moving on to the first story of the day coming out of the mintpressnews.com, U.S. military will have more robots than humans by 2025. Armed with a budget of over $700 billion for the coming year, which will likely continue to grow over the course of Trump's Pentagon-controlled presidency, the Pentagon's dystopian vision for the future of the military is quickly becoming a question, not of if, but when. The Pentagon has repeatedly assured that humans will always remain in control when it comes to making life and death decisions, something they always stress in these points, and that they will be putting special care into preventing robots from engaging in unintended attacks or falling prey to hackers. I just think, you know, extra care to make sure that they don't engage in unintended attacks. I think it's interesting and quite revealing, in my opinion. The mechanization revolution in the military, however, isn't set to stop there. According to the Army's official Robotic and Autonomous Systems Strategy, RAS, the Army plans to have autonomous self-aware systems fully integrated into the force between 2031 and 2040, along with the complete automation of logistics. So consider a completely autonomous military control system, controlling largely autonomous military soldier robots. That just seems like there's nothing that could go wrong there. I'll let you guys read into that one yourselves. DARPA is also largely focused on super soldier programs, which remain largely secret. Of those that are acknowledged, the most disconcerting is the, quote, brain-machine interface, a project first made public by DARPA at a 2002 technology conference. Though its goal was to create a wireless brain modem for a freely moving rat, which would allow the animal's movements to be remotely controlled, DARPA wasn't shy about the eventual goal of applying such a brain enhancement to humans in order to enable soldiers to, quote, communicate by thought alone. Even this went too far for some defense scientists, who warned in a 2008 report that remote guidance or control of a human being could quickly backfire were an adversary to gain access to the implanted technology, and who also raised concerns about the moral dangers of such an augmentation. Go figure. That seems something that is very obvious to me. I mean, we've already seen this happen. There's been open discussions and documentation of essentially controlling like cockroaches, let's say. I've seen videos of that with remote control, literally implanting something on the cockroach and then controlling it via remote control, or even putting things on a human being and being able to control the muscles. So very clearly, this is something that's been in the works for a very long time. So I always argue this is probably something already in the works, but the simple idea that this is even being discussed, the idea of communicating by thought alone, brain-machine interface, it's very alarming. And I always point out the fact that the idea of completely autonomous machines, the idea of not even having human interaction, having them programmed to go out and kill a certain type of enemy, is very clearly something that they've been trying to accomplish for a very long time. So the idea that they always stress that, oh, don't worry, we're always going to make sure humans are right there monitoring and controlling everything, it seems like a very feigned, like what they want us to believe. That's how I see it. But this is something that's very alarming to me, the entire idea of this. So the idea that they're talking about by 2025 having almost all robots, I mean, it's like they're looking to these dystopian movies as a guide to how to proceed. And that should be very alarming to us. But we'll keep track of it and let you know. On another interesting story in regard to scientific development, coming out of sciencedaily.com, graphene on toast, anyone? Scientists create patterned graphene onto food, paper, cloth, and cardboard. The foam consists of microscopic cross-linked flakes of graphene, the two-dimensional form of carbon. LIG can be written into target materials in patterns and used as a supercapacitor, an electrocatalyst for fuel cells, radio frequency identification, RFID, antennas, and biological sensors, among other potential applications. The new work reported in the American Chemical Society journal, ACS Nano, demonstrated that laser-induced graphene can be burned into paper, cardboard, cloth, coal, and certain foods, even toast. They're quoted in saying, "Very often we don't see the advantage of something until we make it available. Perhaps all food will have a tiny RFID tag that gives you information about where it's been, how long it's been stored, its country and city of origin, and the path it took to get to your table." He says LIG tags could also be used for sensors that detect E. coli and other microorganisms on the food. He's quoted in saying they could light up and give you a signal that you don't want to eat this. All that could be placed not on a separate tag on the food, but on the food itself. Now, of course, all of this is always carried out under the guise of, you know, sure, we're trying to protect you from dangerous food and keeping track of where it comes from and all these different aspects. But this is very alarming when you understand what they're really talking about. They're talking about implanting food with microscopic RFID or, you know, in the many number of things that they mentioned there on the food itself. So you're consuming and eating RFID tags that could essentially track you from that point forward. I mean, that is crazy. And not only the fact that we don't even understand what that would do to your body, probably the long-term effect of all the food you're eating, having all kinds of different tags that you're going into your body. That is just, this stuff is outrageous to me. And it clearly, it's always under the guise of some kind of, you know, technological advance for the betterment of humanity. And we never fully understand what this will really do. And ultimately, it'll absolutely be used by these nefarious characters in the government, military, all these different aspects that we never seem to consider under this guise of convenience and security. I mean, this is just so disgusting to me. Just the simple idea that this is something that is in the food itself has to be crazy to us. But I mean, so many people get blinded by the idea of convenience today, but they've been programmed to do so. That's exactly the point. Moving on to the next story coming out of MiddleEastMonitor.com, U.S. calls on Iran to withdraw from Syria. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called on Iran to withdraw its troops and allied militia from Syria. He's quoted in saying, "We are quite concerned about their recent incident involving Israel and Iranian assets inside of Syria. And I think it's again illustrated why Iran's presence in Syria is only destabilizing the region," which is ridiculous when you understand that Iran's allowed to be there per the Syrian government. And that what happened was Israel had been attacking repeatedly and they simply responded. And now all of a sudden that's a violation of Israeli sovereignty, which is just hypocritical and very, you know, it's social engineering. They're trying to manipulate the story using their control of the overall mainstream media. He also added that the United States has a sophisticated plan for peace in the Middle East, which has been under development for several months, and it's now in its advanced stages, which I don't even know what that means when you understand how long this has been going on, claiming that there's like some plan that's just about to be seen, but Iran's getting in the way. Just propaganda. This is just blatant propaganda. Remarking on the U.S. official statements, Ali Akbar Velayati, chief advisor from Iran's spiritual leader, Ali Khamenei, said, quote, "Iran's presence in Syria is legitimate, and it is the United States that should leave," which is just, I mean, clearly, I mean, obviously, that, I mean, that's what's so frustrating about this story is that the idea, the premise of the United States being there for some positive means to protect the people, it's just a complete illegal act from, as far as the UN's concerned, as far as United States government is concerned, even though the Congress really plays no factor anymore in actually seeing these things happen, which is what their entire job is supposed to be. You know, they're there illegally claiming that Iran should leave and that their presence is kind of putting a hitch in their plans. It's just crazy. Ultimately, in most cases, the world is beginning to respond to this and point out the fact that what Israel, United States, what they're trying to carry out is grossly illegal and that it's violating Syrian sovereignty. And the point is this is happening on the Golan Heights where Israel has legally taken land from Syria, claiming that now it's theirs. And Syria is just responding to attacks, which I think is ultimately a positive thing. We're finally seeing them have the courage to respond to defend themselves. I mean, as always, it doesn't mean that Syria is an amazing place that's always full of freedom and positivity, but the point is that there are rules in place. You can't just violate someone's sovereignty like that for no, really for resource and geopolitical reasons. Just always think of it in the reverse. If somebody were to come in and bomb America thinking, oh, we're fighting your rebels, then claim after they killed all these civilians that it was for a positive end, how do you think people in the country would respond? How do you think the government would respond? Exactly like Syria, well, much worse than Syrian's government responding, but only now we're finally seeing them fight back. So this is a ridiculous story saying that they're telling Iran to leave when they're the ones there illegally. It is ultimately just an absurd story that I'm hoping people are starting to see through. Moving on to the next story coming out of ZeroHedge.com, Mueller indicts 13 Russians, three companies for interfering in U.S. election. Shortly after noon on Friday, U.S. Special Counsel Robert Mueller announced an indictment of 13 Russian nationals and three Russian entities, accusing them of interfering in the 2016 presidential election and operating fake social media accounts. The indictments add that the Russians were instructed to post content that focused on politics in the USA and to use any opportunity to criticize Hillary and the rest. And as the article says, it only gets better from there. The defendants reportedly work day and night shifts to pump out messages, controlling pages, targeting a range of issues, including immigration, Black Lives Matter, and they amassed hundreds of thousands of followers. They set up and use servers inside the U.S. to mask the Russian origin of the accounts. Ultimately, and this one is the punchline, the goal was to disparage Hillary Clinton and to assist the election of Donald Trump. In other words, anyone who was disparaging Clinton may have unwittingly been in a collaborator of the 13 Russian specialists who cost Hillary the election. I mean, this is just so funny when you realize that this entire story is about Russian collusion as it pertains to Donald Trump, yet it seemingly has almost washed him clean of this, showing that there's no connection here. It's very frustrating. Rosenstein even said himself, there is no allegation in this indictment that any American was a knowing participant in this illegal activity. There is no allegation in the indictment that the Russians' conduct altered the outcome of the election. I mean, they are grasping at straws here, saying that 13 social media accounts had this kind of effect. It is outrageous to me that this has been allowed to carry on this long, especially with what we've seen about the FBI, the ongoing criminal activity in every regard, and specifically how it pertains to this Russian investigation. It is just outrageous to me. And there's another point they add in that U.S. Deputy AG Rosenstein says after the election, Russians staged rallies both to support and to oppose Donald Trump. Oh, it was very smart of them to go both ways. Ultimately, to summarize, in 2014, 13 Russians launched a campaign to interfere with the U.S. political system by disparaging candidates. This continued until ultimately Trump was elected. Meanwhile, quote, there was no allegation in this indictment that Americans had knowingly participated in the illegal activity. I mean, I don't even know what this is supposed to mean. This just makes me laugh. It basically, so they didn't have an effect on the election. No American was involved. They essentially had social media accounts. So you're talking about 13 Russians that were tweeting about how bad Hillary was. I mean, that's a simplification and I'm being facetious, but it is absolutely absurd that this has been the result of the ultimate investigation of the 2016 Russian collusion accusations. I mean, it is just absolutely crazy. And I think, again, this is just grasping at straws, and it's something that's just, I think this is just another leg of trying to manipulate the attention to some other aspect. Now, all of the Democrats are going to jump on and point at this as, oh, this is proof. It happened. It's absurd. And I hope that everybody can truly see that. And actually, Russia recently responded saying this is absurd, calling the election meddling allegations absurd, which, again, I mean, you could read that article, but it really just basically does the same thing. It recounts the idea of how stupid it is that they're accusing 13 people of basically having enough power to overcome the entirety of the U.S. intelligence organizations during the election. It's pretty ridiculous. And I really hope everybody can see that. And the next story coming out of the antimedia.org, Russia will have exclusive rights over oil and gas production in Syria. Now, this one is very interesting, and this is something that Russia has been trying to accomplish for a while, but I think this ultimately has huge implications for where this battle is going. We're seeing Israel absolutely trying to fight for control of resources, both oil and water, in the Golan Heights. Ultimately, the question is, what does this mean for that area? They're claiming it's part of Israel, but clearly it's a part of Syria. So ultimately, with this, Russia now has control of that area as it pertains to oil and gas production. But also, the United States has been trying to get in on this the entire time. I mean, that's the entire point, I think, because this connects all back to Venezuela, Iran, and that entire power structure, and how the economic warfare being carried out against Venezuela has ultimately been an attack on Russia's control over their resources. It's a very interesting dynamic at play here. But to see this actually happen, I think this is going to cause some interesting responses by the United States and the connections with Saudi Arabia. I mean, there's a lot to this story, so I highly recommend you dig into this one yourself. But the fact that Russia now has exclusive rights over these productions in Syria, this could ultimately kick everything off, as far as I'm concerned, more so than the recent attacks on Russian soldiers. It's very, very, very interesting, and this is like a powder keg waiting to erupt, because ultimately, in my opinion, outside of just geopolitical control, the fight over the resources has been the ultimate point here. And so this in itself could cause Russia to then have a real reason to step in and just ultimately take control of Syria in this regard, and that could be very interesting. So we'll keep track of this story and we'll let you know what happens. And so we had a few different stories today. We're discussing the FBI and all these different aspects. And the important thing to always bring this back to is, despite the fact that it's now been almost 2 weeks since we were told from the right of the false two-party deception that the revelations in the FISA memo would have immediate repercussions if released. And the left side of the pretend two-party divide claimed that it would devastate national security, clearly neither of which were true. And these so-called revelations were ultimately nothing we didn't already generally know. But like I said, the fragile and lofty attention span of those anchored to the political game have been redirected to the gun control debate, and the crimes of the elite have once again been all but forgotten. But to try to end on a positive note today, the final story of the day, kind of coming out of coinivore.com, Coinbase launches cryptocurrency commerce service for merchants, partners with Shopify. Coinbase has launched a new commerce service, self-titled Coinbase Commerce, to help online stores handle payments in four leading cryptocurrencies: Bitcoin, Ethereum, Bitcoin Cash, and Litecoin. The company seeks to expand its market by letting potential merchants add cryptocurrency payments into their portfolio, allowing the seamless mainstream adoption of cryptocurrency to complete its mission to, quote, create an open financial system. Online retailers and big and small businesses everywhere can now use Coinbase Commerce to accept Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, and Litecoin payments for services and goods directly into a user-controlled wallet. The best part is that the service isn't only limited to the U.S., but it's allowing businesses worldwide to accept cryptocurrency for goods and services. Now, some are saying that this is an ominous step, a bad one even, and I understand the apprehension of getting entangled with the current system. But as long as the currency remains decentralized, I feel that this is a positive step. And only in the early stages, really, as I still feel we should continue to strive for completely anonymous and peer-to-peer transactions. But one step at a time here. Anything that cuts out the bankster middlemen is a good step as far as I'm concerned. But as always, we must be watchful of the surreptitious government moves behind the scenes. Now, for more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.